Good morning. Today is Thursday, May the 11th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County District Attorney.
Good morning, Brian.
Maggie Fleming. Were you at the swearing-in of Billy?
Yes, I was.
That must have been kind of fun.
It was nice. It was very nice, you know, to sort of go through that stage of watching one retire and one take office. It was nice. And both of them were accompanied by their families, who really do deserve
a lot of
credit, because they make a huge sacrifice.
Part of the team.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's see what we can find here for a quote from Marilyn Monroe. All right. So everybody's already kind of gone there already. But you're wrong. Quote, "Men are always willing to respect anything that bores them." Gotcha, huh?
Didn't expect that.
Oh, gee. Well, I would imagine that the last few days of this week have been kind of tied up with people asking you, what about the determination that Judge Dale did with the situation at Humboldt where the sophomore was killed, and you found somebody, you thought there was enough, and it didn't quite work out.
Right.
I guess, you know, from on Mount High, what comments do you have?
Well, it is an open investigation at this point, so I can't, you know, necessarily comment on the underlying facts. It is important, I think, to understand the criminal process. When someone is arrested, we have 48 hours to make a determination whether or not we have sufficient evidence to charge them. And you have to get that person, in essence, if you're going to charge them, before the court within those 48 hours for the arraignment. And then at arraignment, that person has the right to say, I demand my preliminary hearing within 10 court days. And this individual did not waive time, so obviously we went to preliminary hearing very rapidly. The case is still unfolding. It's still under investigation. And what we found is that the information we presented at the hearing differed from the information available when the case was charged, significantly so. And sometimes that happens. You know, people make statements, and then when called to testify, testimony changes, information that we thought we had changes. And so at the end of it, the court found, and, you know, he's a very qualified, experienced judge, said, I just don't see that it's here. And that's where it's at right now.
Now, did he say or indicate there wasn't enough here to support going to a case? Or if there's a determination that the information, I guess he wouldn't say shaky, but layman's term, is shaky enough that if it gets appealed up, there's no way it's going to pass muster at the next level?
So the preliminary hearing purpose is for a judge to determine if there's sufficient evidence to charge the named person and sufficient evidence for those specific charge or charges. And that's the sole purpose of the preliminary hearing. And that was the determination made, that no, there was not sufficient evidence to say this person should be held and for this charge for trial.
KINS News and Information Times, 819. We'll be back with more from Maggie Fleming.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 824. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, the case that we were talking about before, and others, I presume it's, you know, this is probably a pretty well-worn trail, where you come to come to charge, and it doesn't end up where you want it to be. Is there a process? Is there a template? Is there a system that is followed and with a series of forks in the road that are those decisions are made to continue it? And sometimes it may not work out the way that you anticipate?
Yes. I think so. There's sort of two questions, you know, in a sense there. One is we do sometimes initially make a charging decision. We go to preliminary hearing, and similar to this one, we say we're going to put on everybody who may or, you know, thinks they have pertinent, relevant evidence to offer, information to offer, to really sort of look at it and evaluate it and have them answer questions under oath. And then sometimes at the end, no, we don't get a holding order. And then, like I say, we go back to law enforcement and the case is an open investigation and, you know, leads are followed up on and additional forensic evidence might be evaluated. But then on the other side of that issue that we see, and perhaps because this one has become more high profile, it's something that the public is looking at that we see in many cases, is that frequently when we have violent acts that may seem sort of obvious to the public, what we...
Slam dunks.
Yeah. But what we don't have are witnesses. And it's interesting because this does occur in party situations. This does occur in people who are either drinking or using drugs, where at the end of the day, it's very difficult to prove what actually occurred.
So, let's see. Somebody comes upon a scene, and somebody is dead, and somebody is standing, let's say, with a baseball bat with blood on it. Okay? Kind of seems like 1 + 1 will equal 2 on that. But because nobody saw the event, that kind of makes it a little bit more challenging, a little bit more difficult, more evidence needs to be supplied, et cetera, et cetera.
That's correct.
Okay.
And then what I think sometimes the public, you know, doesn't necessarily recognize is we really can only make decisions. I can only charge someone based upon admissible evidence. There is a lot of people who want and some have even demanded, you know, in cases that something occur, and the public really has to understand it's not about perceptions or assumptions. It has to be evidence. There has to be information that someone can swear to tell the truth and answer questions and present information for us to move forward with cases. And it's
admissible evidence.
Right.
I heard the emphasis on the admissible.
Right. Well, because sometimes people have, they think they have information and it's hearsay. They're hearing it from someone else. That's not admissible. Sometimes there's anonymous tips. That's not admissible. Sometimes it's just sort of, and I know we've talked about this before, there's sort of this rumor that gets started and then people feel as though they know the underlying facts. And again, that's not admissible evidence. So that's what we need. And it's this case, it's other cases, it's people. You know, people need to come forward and people should be reporting that to law enforcement if they want to see something come of any particular case.
A resolution of some sort.
Right.
Social media. Is that hampering, hindering,
hurting,
or assisting?
I'm sure there are cases out there that have been helped by information on social media. I can't really think of any right now. I can say there's a significant amount of hurtful comments that are on social media that stir up emotions and can really negatively impact the community and can mislead. So that's a concern.
It mucks things up.
Yes.
Yeah, I keep using technical terms. Let me know if I'm shooting over your head there.
Legal terms.
Yeah.
That's right, Brian.
Well, and I suppose that that can also be a source of frustration because a regular guy and gal doesn't know the precise definition of some of the terms, some of the standards, some of the things that are part and parcel to what you guys and gals do all the time. You know, we tend to go with a more generalist approach rather than the specific. Is that another thing that can kind of stir things up?
You know, it can. I think it's also, you know, sort of recognizing a lot of times people from out of the area turn to that as a source of information, and then law enforcement or my office gets phone calls saying, well, I read, you know, X, Y, and Z. Why haven't you done anything about that? And again, we have to go back and explain what people are commenting doesn't necessarily have to do with the facts, the evidence.
It's 8:30.
As a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redeck. Maggie, another event that you had the opportunity to participate with, which I think is one of the coolest things, and if folks haven't, or their kids or grandkids haven't, I think it's one of the neatest things that the CHP and the local schools are doing now that could have happened when we were going through the every 15 minutes. You want to describe a little bit about what that is?
Yes, so it is an amazing program. In part with CHP and then a number of other supporting community members. So the fire department participates, the coroner's office, one of the local mortuaries. And the program is based upon bringing the students together, having them formulate, in essence, a script that will reveal a tragic DUI-related fatality. They show that to the students, and then the students involved, whether those who are hurt or killed, you know, in that reenactment, as well as the person responsible, are removed from the student population. And then a Grim Reaper is at the school and every 15 minutes removes another child from the classroom, in essence showing them what the rate of death is related to alcohol in our country. And then the last day they have a funeral service where parents get up and talk about what this loss means to them. They have students who get up and read either what it's like to have lost their best friend or to apologize for their conduct. And then we have a sentencing hearing, and that's where I participated, as well as we have a criminal defense attorney who represents the accused. And in this case, it was Mark Hapgood who gave up his time to participate. And then Judge Wilson was the judge who presided over that portion, and then he imposed sentence. And it's really, I think the students really feel it. I think it's an incredible program to sort of remind everybody, if you want to reduce the death and tragedy in our communities, the best way you can do it is simply don't drink and drive. The program has had tremendous impact. The rate of DUIs with students, with drivers 21 and younger, has drastically dropped down over the last couple decades. And although it's still called every 15 minutes, what we know now nationwide is it's every 53 minutes, which is still too high. The idea that we lose someone every hour in our country related to drunk driving is absurd. They also have a program the night before for the students who the Grim Reaper has pulled out of the classroom. And I go and speak to those students because I don't think that most people really understand this impact. And one thing that we know nationwide, and I see it, you know, in our cases, is that one in five, the drunk driver has killed their passenger. And that's really traumatic for a community because you're talking about, you know, and I use the example with the students, you're talking about the mother of the deceased child is sometimes sitting next to the mother of her child's best friend. And these are women who have worked every school event, every soccer game, every everything together, and now they're going through what is, for both of them, their worst nightmare. And it's true for the fathers and grandparents and for friends. It tears the community apart, and it's so easy to prevent.
It sounds like you've got a horse in the race. I can't imagine, you know, the boyfriend, girlfriend.
Yes.
Both going, buddies, like you were talking about.
Right.
You know, and we see it, and it may not be high school related, but we still see it here. You know, 36 is kind of renowned.
Yes.
In 2 weeks, hopefully we make it through and not have, you know, the graduation times. We're not,
right,
the class after me. It happened. You know, a couple of my classmates at Eureka High, same scenario. It's interesting for me to see the process as the kids early on. I got to play, you know, Dr. Death. giggle, giggle. Okay. About the third or fourth one getting selected, something happened.
Right.
To the student body. It was at Arcata High. Something started to change, and the giggles became somber. And then the finality of it, or the seriousness of it, started to change. When you were talking to the kids that had been pulled out Thursday night, were they all kind of at that spot of,
oh yeah,
serious,
yeah,
and we get it, and
yes,
yeah.
Yeah. And the process, like I say, it's really a community event and partnership, and the filming of it is the movie that they show, you know, for the memorial and for sentencing. And part of it is watching, you know, the child who's been killed by the drunk driver, who of course is a friend of hers, you know, in this reenactment. And she's at the morgue, and her parents come in because, you know, the parents have to come in and identify their child. And I looked over and I realized this is what really hits kids, is watching your parents try to cope, you know, with that moment.
Or projecting themselves into it.
Right.
That it's not,
right,
you know, yeah, there's theater involved.
Right.
You know, and logically, but this is an emotional thing. It's not,
yes,
a logical thing.
Right.
And seeing the impact, or, you know, when there's the presentation of the court.
Right.
And you get classmates and buddies crying in the seats.
Right.
And you go, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so, you know it's taken some.
Right.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's... And I really appreciate the timing. You know, the schools have always done this right at the end of April, early May. It's before prom and it's before graduation, which we both know are sometimes events where students drink alcohol.
Don't forget the spring party.
The spring party.
Or for the senior class,
right,
picnic,
right,
I think, yeah, is how it's phrased. But yeah, same. KINS, News and Information Times 843. We'll be back with more from Maggie Fleming.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 847. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, some of the different challenges you mentioned this Memorial Day coming up in conjunction with the every 15 minutes. How have laws changed regarding underage drinking, imbibing, things of that nature? Is that getting more aggressive now? Is it less aggressive? Has case law really changed significantly over the last 20 plus years?
Definitely. I mean, one of the most significant changes, and this applies across the board, is, I think I've mentioned this too before to you, that when I first started, it was a higher blood alcohol level. We're now at a 0.08 because the studies that have been done show that at that point, that's the equivalent of four drinks in the system at that point in time. And what the studies have shown is that can impair someone's ability to perceive and respond.
That would impair my ability to find the parking lot. Four in an hour?
And yeah. So for underage drinkers, they're not supposed to have any measurable alcohol. It's illegal for them to drink. They also have now much stricter license restrictions. So they can lose their license related to having any measurable alcohol in their system. So there are a number of changes that have come about that, you know, clearly punish the conduct. The hope, of course, is that just the awareness, the programs, the education that's out there will really reach at people's hearts just to not do this.
What about other drugs?
The other drugs are obviously also a serious problem. Unfortunately, we don't have quite the same standardized way to measure the impact that something in that person's system can affect their driving, so it's harder.
Is there anything in the works as we're approaching recreational use?
Yes. Yeah, other states have started,
the equivalent of a DUI?
Yes.
Or
yeah.
Blood alcohol?
Right.
That'll be interesting to see. It all states kind of the same?
With states
mark?
That have moved towards legalization. So we're seeing it in Washington, Colorado, other places. We also have a high number of people who use prescription meds and drive. And again, that's a real serious issue. And how do we measure that? How do you measure at what point a certain level impairs a driver?
May you live in interesting times. I hate that quote. Or is it a curse or a promise? I don't know.
Thank
Thanks
you,
for coming by.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.